Hello and welcome to the Soft Tattooed Millionaires Podcast. I'm your host, Jack, and I'm joined by my brother, Max, and we are both, as I'm sure everyone else is, deep into the World Cup right now. Max, what have you loved so far?
Ooh, I think that I have loved that there's so much to love in individual games. I still feel like there isn't one runaway like Cinderella story or anything like that. We just, it's still so like up in the air. And that's fascinating. Like every time I think like, oh, this is what's going to happen in this group, there's actually like been some kind of like counteracting measure that's happened that's changed what I thought what's going to happen and all that kind of stuff. How about you? What have you loved?
I mean, it's not that sophisticated, but there's just been so many goals.
Yeah.
Like every game has been so entertaining. It's the, you know, like everyone's saying, it's the longest, or World Cup has never gone this far without having a goalless draw. So awesome. I mean, certainly the 6-1 England beat Panama today helped with the total goal tally, but I've loved it so far. I guess the only disappointments I've had there are, you know, some of the smaller teams getting knocked out or seeing, you know, Morocco and Egypt get out so early, and definitely Peru. I mean, that always sucks, and Panama being it, that it's their first World Cup ever, you know, still haven't gotten a point, but, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think I have similar disappointments. So let's just jump right into talking specifically about some of the World Cup stuff.
Sweet.
I've got lots of questions, lots of things to talk about, and I'm sure you do too. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with your questions, because I don't have any questions so much as I have just a lot of exclamation points after the word Mexico.
Okay. Ooh, really interesting.
Yeah.
I came prepared for this because let's start there. So
right.
You tell me what give me your exclamation marks for Mexico.
I think like with the first game, I think watching Chicharito cry after the game, just, you know, I don't experience a full range of emotion on any given day. So I rely on things like soccer or movies to help me access humanity. And watching Chicharito cry just like opened me up so much more than I anticipated. And I really fell in love with him. And I just want Mexico to do well. They've been playing really lovely counterattacking soccer. I mean, I think if they could absolutely like learn to finish some of their chances, you know, the game against Germany could have been a little bit more lopsided. But now I've just been the joy of the fans, the joy of the team. It certainly seems like they're all playing together. I love watching Carlos Vela on LAFC and working for Mexico, Chucky Lozano. Yeah, there's just a lot to like about Mexico.
Okay, that is great. I came prepared to talk about why you shouldn't get so excited about Mexico.
No. That's
not
fine.
Because I've really enjoyed watching them play as well, but I also feel like there's some reasons to temper our excitement about them. So one of that is that like the Korea game, mm-hmm. Sure, great result, but you know, don't forget that one of those goals was just a penalty that was kind of shitty. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like that game was close to being 1-1, and that Mexico was somewhat undisciplined in their attack, where it just seemed like there was some moments when Lozano and then one where Chicharito like got the ball kind of outside the box and just fired a shot, and they weren't really like making, it didn't seem like that the kind of beautiful counterattacking flow that led to that one like absolutely unbelievable goal against Germany. They were able to recapture against Korea, and they seemed to actually just be missing some of that. And I'm excited for Mexico too. I think it's, you know, things are looking great for them, but I also was not blown away with their performance against Korea. And if that goes slightly differently and that game ends up 1-1, you know, like we're having a totally different conversation, and I think people are forgetting like how close that game was to really having a result like that.
Yeah, I think the Sweden game is going to be an interesting test, because Sweden will be looking for goals, and that'll kind of open them up at the back. So mm-hmm. Mexico is going to have a similar, you know, or similar chances to that they did against Germany, whereas South Korea kind of sat back a little bit. Not that they didn't need a goal, but not in the same way that Sweden will need one. And Germany had so much attacking prowess going forward, you know, caught them surprised a few times. But yeah, I'm excited. I don't know. I think all like what's been annoying me about Mexico is just like all like the media stuff, but like how we can't root for Mexico, or like Landon Donovan being a shill. Like, I don't really care.
Yeah, I have zero interest in even talking about that kind of stuff, too.
Great. It's total bullshit. I don't care.
It's bullshit. It's also just, like, kind of a waste of time. Like, they're a good team. Let's talk about them as a team. So what do you feel like are Mexico's weaknesses then?
I think their weakness is going up against...
Well, why do you think? Let me roll some stuff out about South Korea. I mean, yeah. Obviously the way South Korea plays too has been, and this is an oversimplification, but has been just to rely on Sun to do anything on offense. Yeah. And so maybe Mexico doesn't really get a chance to see counterattacking kind of thing just because of the way South Korea has set up, which was exactly that. They kept a lot of people behind the ball and then just relied on Sun to do something. And lo and behold, that is exactly what happened in that game.
Yeah.
Where Sun created a moment of magic and was good enough to get one goal. And unfortunately for South Korea, some sloppy defending led to a cheap penalty that kind of like broke down that strategy of being really organized and just relying on their best player to do something really magical.
Yep. I think Mexico, if they don't catch you on the break, like it's going to be a lot harder for them to craft chances, so to speak, like if someone allows them the opportunity to have possession. But still very much excited. Do you want to talk a little bit about the other CONCACAF teams? Or do you have other questions?
Well, so you think that they're just not going to be able to craft chances. So my question to you is, like, why is that the case? We both love Carlos Vela.
Yeah.
We both love, are excited about Chucky Lozano and stuff like that. So why aren't they able to craft those kind of chances?
Well, I think so far what they've been, like, what's been working for them is, like, their speed and just, like, their link-up play. Whereas, like, I don't know if they have... Well, it's one of those things. Like, is Carlos Vela going to be able to score the kind of goals he scores in the MLS at the World Cup? It's difficult to say like what the quality of defending is at the World Cup. I mean, certainly there are better defenders, but sort of like worse teamwork, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a ridiculous thing to say, but like this, not everyone's on the same game plan at the World Cup. But like, is Carlos Vela going to be able to sort of like be at the top of the box and kind of like curl one in his signature fashion? I don't know. Like if Mexico can start doing that, then I'll be more convinced. But also, like, I started talking about Mexico because I am convinced that they can do something. So maybe I should just shut up and say yes, I believe in Mexico. Let's go.
Okay. So, good answer. I think another game against, their next game against Sweden will be another test for them too, to see how they deal with a team that has, some stout center backs and if they're able to like do more than what I saw from them against South Korea, which is kind of like get close to the box and then have a quick trigger and rather than really work something.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on. So Mexico looking good. Other CONCACAF teams, though, let's dig in there.
I mean, I want to start with Costa Rica just because watching the Costa Rica Brazil game, it was kind of heartbreaking to see like the Ticos give up two injury time goals. You know, and I just would have loved to have seen Brazil get knocked out so early. That would be, I mean, it sounds shitty, but I just would love to see Brazil not make it out of the group.
Yeah, that's maybe one of the. Well, it's hard for us to talk about some of the big storylines that we're kind of like flirting. Like some of the big name teams are flirting with disaster.
Yeah.
And disaster has yet to completely befall one of these teams.
Yeah.
So like we're waiting with bated breath to see what happens this next week.
Yeah. I mean, Poland being one of the best teams in qualifying, getting knocked out is pretty rough, but they're not, are they a giant like a Germany or a Brazil? No, but they're certainly the next tier.
And I feel maybe with Poland,
it's a much harder group than people thought it was. When everyone was saying, this is such an upset that Senegal beat Poland, I didn't see it as that much of an upset.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think, Senegal has lots of good players. Like their entire team starts for good teams.
Yeah.
You know, there's no gimmies there on that roster. So it's them beating Poland is like, well, that happens, you know. All right, but let's keep talking about CONCACAF though. So Costa Rica, yeah, disappointed for them. Costa Rica and Panama obviously are each 0-2, and Costa Rica has yet to score a goal. Panama scored one goal later in the England game, and which was actually kind of a great moment. Their fans cheered crazily, And I think they, I don't know if they were down 5-1 at that point or was, whatever.
Yeah, they were down 6 by, yeah. After the goal was 6-1, yeah.
And anyway, it was, but nonetheless, even though it came at that point in the game, even though, like, you know, it was kind of a nightmare game for Panama, the Panamanian fans were going crazy. It was the first goal that Panama had ever scored in a World Cup, and they were really seemed delighted and cheerful for that opportunity, even though in terms of bigger picture, you know, Panama obviously is not doing great at the World Cup. But so happy for Panama at least to score a goal, but Costa Rica still has no goals, and both teams are 0-2. What does this do for CONCACAF's reputation?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, like, what I've been seeing today on Twitter is just like, oh, you know, Panama has the highest amount of MLS players of any team in the World Cup. And so, like, is this a judgment on the MLS? And, you know, I don't really have a good answer. I think that you can definitely make the case that, yes, this is an indictment on the MLS and the quality of players that get time there. But I could also say, you know, like, it's a World Cup, it's a national team, it's they're two different things entirely. Like, the way that this team is organized, they're, like, trying to put together a defense, they've never been to World Cup. Like, I think that there's, I don't know if the two things follow, you know, the fact that they're on the MLS and they have a -8 goal difference. But that being said, I can also say that, oh, it'd be really obvious as well. So I actually don't really know what to make of that opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's great. I mean, at the same time, you could say, yeah, it's an indictment on MLS. You can just look at, or an indictment on MLS / CONCACAF. You can also turn your attention to Mexico, where, you know, yeah, you've got Carlos Velos, Dos Santos. You got, you know, like, lots of good players from the Mexican roster playing in MLS and that kind of thing. So it's, I don't know, it's easy to say that, and I don't think it looks great, but it also kind of points out, I mean, I think if you dig into just Costa Rica and Panama, those are two teams that right now kind of seem like, you know, their big name players are older now, and they're maybe at the tail end of a sort of success cycle / trying to rebuild. But, you know, they're kind of going through, in a lot of ways, what the U.S. men's national team maybe went through, where you're watching, like, Ramon Torres, who's like, just doesn't have pace right now. And when you saw him just constantly get exposed for that against England, where during all of these English set pieces, like, he was not able to man mark guys, and, you know, like, covered Harry Kane while leaving John Stones wide open behind him, and doing all these kind of things where you're just like, man, this guy's not really a stout defender or anything like that. And so maybe what we're seeing in general is that it was a kind of a low year for CONCACAF, and that makes the failure of the men's team to qualify even stronger, I think, in relief, because you're seeing that, like, oh, it's not just that, like, CONCACAF is bad. It's really like, this is a bad year for Costa Rica in some ways and a bad year for Panama.
Yeah, that's really what I was going to say, is that it's an indictment of the U.S. men's national team more than it is an indictment of the MLS, right? Like, I mean, this sounds stupid. I don't think we deserve to qualify, but I do think we're a better team than Panama and Costa Rica. But, you know, that I know that, like, maybe it doesn't make a whole lot of intuitive sense, but I do think that the USA is a better team than Costa Rica and Panama, but we just, like, couldn't get our shit together.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's sort of true, but I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, Costa Rica is a pretty good team. You know, like, as you said, gave up some injury time goals, that kind of thing. And, you know, obviously is, like, a good defending team with a superstar keeper. And so they're definitely a team that I think is built to just in some ways cruise through qualification because they're just so solid. But yeah, against top, you know, top teams internationally, yeah, they're not going to get result because they just don't have, like, true goal scorers.
Yeah. Who do you think was the top scorer in CONCACAF World Cup qualification?
Wow.
I'll just tell you, because I work with a lot of Guatemalans, they're very proud of this fact.
who is it?
It's Carlos Ruiz, obviously Guatemalan. He had 9 goals, and he wasn't even on a team. He played one game for FC Dallas in 2016, but in throughout World Cup qualification, he had 9 goals.
I mean, I was going to say that Dempsey might be higher up on that list.
Yeah, let's see. So Jose Altidore had 8, Christian Pulisic had 7, so Jesse Altidore doesn't make an appearance on the list. But Just something to keep in mind. Anyways, do you wanna turn our attention to sort of domestic matters? I feel like for most of the soccer world in the U.S., we're kind of it's hard to pay attention to the MLS and the U.S. Open Cup right now because the World Cup is just it's just an embarrassment of riches. It's every morning it's a buffet of soccer. My whole life right now is like waking up at 6:30, watching 6 hours of soccer, and then going to work for 10 hours and waking up early just to do it all over again.
Yeah, let's turn our attention, but first I want to get some touchy-feely stuff
about the World Cup. Can't wait.
So two questions.
Yeah.
What player do you feel worst for, and what player do you feel happiest for?
That's really good. I mean, I think probably Mo Salah is at the top of most people's list as far as players you feel the worst for. Mm. I would also say Amrabat for Morocco when he was knocked unconscious in the game against Iran. And there's this thing called tonic posturing that happens when you have a midbrain injury. It's also called fencing, like the fencing posture, where when you're knocked out, one of your arms goes up, and it looks like you're kind of like pointing at something. So this is what happened to Amrabat when he got knocked out. He was pointing at the sky, and it looked like he was talking to himself. And I found it so eerie that it sort of looked as if he was kind of like pointing at a star and trying to explain it to someone. And then when he got up, you know, they're slapping him in the face and throwing water at him and trying to like... I felt it made me queasy to watch, and so I really feel for him. I didn't.
Let me jump in with someone that I feel terrible for.
Yeah.
Gylfi Sigurdsson. He said after missing the penalty and losing that game, he said it was, quote, the toughest moment of my career.
That's rough.
That is rough, and I mean, I know when he skied that penalty, he just like walked away.
Yeah.
And he just looked like a man who was completely defeated. Yeah. And so I feel bad for him for sure. How about who do you feel happiest for? Player, Ooh. Maybe a team. It's kind of hard to say player-wise, but
yeah.
What do you think?
I mean, I think Mexico is up there right now. And I think it's really just because I am still, like, I still feel like I could cry right now thinking about Chicharito crying. Definitely happy for them, I guess. Who else? I'm looking at the groups right now, looking at who's on top and just thinking about like the moments of joy that I have witnessed so far. You know, Musa, I think I'm pretty happy for him. I think he's definitely on a lot more people's radar now after his incredible goal, just like with the pace and muscling the defender in the last game. But I'll just go with like the Mexico front three.
Yeah, they seem to be walking on air right now. I could dig that. I think if you're Chucky Lozano, I mean,
yeah,
you're living the dream right now.
Yeah, they seem to be like playing at the peak of their abilities, but also in love.
Like I said, I have some frustration with, I think, how they played against Korea. But I think that, like, yeah, Lozano, like, he's right now, he's just really making a name for himself and taking, yeah. You know.
Linked with Barcelona today.
I see that, but I'm not. Anyway, we don't need to get into that.
No. That's why the World Cup is great.
Yeah, he's becoming one of those people. It's awesome.
It's so fucking great. All right, who do you feel the best for?
I think Lozano.
Yeah.
And then, cause just looking through, I'm not sure I've got anyone that really jumps out from other teams that I can even say it's worth saying I feel good for. Like, oh, I can't really say, oh, I feel great for Luka Modric. Yeah, like, he's fucking crushing it. You know,
way to go, Harry Kane. I guess I feel good for I guess I can feel good for the English because they just never feel good.
Like, I think, I mean, you know, like, and I just watched the Senegal draw with Japan, and I was feeling pretty good for Cisse, the Senegalese coach, but this was such a difficult result for them, so maybe that's tempered.
Yeah. Great. It's also funny to think about all the teams that are doing well, but like you because of the expectation of their country, you don't feel a lot of joy from them, like Spain or France or I guess maybe that's about it. All right, let's talk about the U.S. Open Cup. There are 8 remaining teams. Philadelphia Union is going to be playing against Orlando City. Chicago Fire is matched up with the only non-MLS team, and that's Louisville. We've got Houston Dynamo going against Sporting KC. And then the last matchup is LAFC versus the Portland Timbers. Which one of those matchups are you most excited for? Who do you think has the best chance of going forward, and who's your dark horse?
You know, it's for me, you know, like the US Open Cup, the magic of it is obviously like having non-MLS teams do well.
Yes.
And so I'm excited for the Louisville Chicago game, even if I think it's, I mean, you know, more than a dark horse, you know, or more than a shot in the dark kind of thing.
Yeah,
but
no, I mean, Chicago hasn't been playing great, so
yeah, that's true.
It's anything. I mean, anything is possible. I think that's a pretty favorable matchup for Louisville. I don't think they'll be too upset about that.
Yeah, I think, you know, looking at the teams left, there are, I mean, between Philadelphia, like, Orlando, and Chicago, yeah, those are three not super great teams.
Yeah, it's strangely like 50-50. I think Philly has been playing a little bit better lately, but it is interesting. But also, I think like Houston Dynamo versus Sporting KC could have been like a final. So,
yeah, totally. I'm with you 100% on that. That's probably that's the best matchup in my book.
Yeah. I think, you know, as far as like teams that have the best chance, I would like to see LAFC win something this year, just because I've really enjoyed watching the atmosphere of their games and just like watching their play. I think that would be awesome to see them lift a trophy in their first year. I think Orlando City is just a mess right now, and yes, so I don't have a whole lot of faith in them going forward. I'd like to see Louisville go for it. I think that's just kind of like the natural thing to do, like you said. I think it's possible. I mean, the US Open Cup is great. I'm a little disappointed that there's only one non-MLS team, though.
Yeah, agreed. But, you know, wishing great things for Louisville. Keep our dreams alive, please.
Yeah, we are all, was it Louisvillians or what is it?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Okay, great. we're all Louis. Great. Awesome. Well, I have a couple of things I want to talk about the MLS in general and sort of just get your read on it. You cool if I just sort of like rapid fire some stuff at you?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, bring it at me.
So, we didn't do one last week. Think like you were out of town, I was working, just been crazy busy in general. But so we didn't get a chance to talk about Orlando City and the coaching change. So au revoir, Jason Kreese. No, I wasn't the biggest fan of him in general. I think like when he made that comment about the fan, like the home support being a negative thing for Orlando City, that it gave their opponents an edge, I just thought he was one of the dumbest people on the planet. But seventh loss in a row yesterday to Montreal. Orlando CEO has said that the stated goal for whoever comes in is to make the playoffs this year. Announcement on the new coach is expected by the end of the week. Caleb Porter is the leading candidate right now. I mean, he won the 2015 MLS Cup, made the playoffs in Portland, 3 of his 5 years in charge. I mean, the other two names that are being floated are both ex-Brazil coaches, so Dunga and Felipe Scolari. I think, obviously, Caleb Porter is the most realistic candidate. How do you feel about that?
I mean, I think it'd be great.
Yeah, you know, I really like Caleb Porter, and I like Orlando.
Caleb Porter has to do nothing to prove himself.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, he is who he is. So, and it seems that like Orlando could really use some consistency and someone who's like kind of in it for the project.
Yeah,
and you know, Caleb Porter has a great reputation with all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I think that would be a great fit.
Yeah, I mean, we're halfway through the season. Orlando City, 19 points right now. They're one win away from a playoff spot. I don't think it's unrealistic to say that, you know, we want the playoffs this year. So.
Yeah. And I think too, you know, like, would also just be excited to see Caleb Porter back in coaching.
Yeah.
Totally. Because, you know, if he is one of the better American coaches, then like we want to see him employed and, yeah. Putting him in a big market like Orlando has been in terms of its fan support would also just be cool.
Yeah, it's a great stadium. I think he would do like you have the raw talent there to make a run. You know, like there are good players.
You really
there.
Do.
Yeah, but this is supposed to be rapid fire, so let's keep going.
Okay.
Next up, Novakovic. He signed an extension with Reading, and then he immediately went on loan to an Eredivisie side, Fortuna Sittard. So, farewell, Telstar. Their brief foray into American soccer culture will not soon be forgotten. Sittard is not named after a communication satellite.
Damn it.
And Wikipedia offered nothing interesting about the club nor the town itself. So, I'm actually very bummed out about that, but it is great to see him moving up a league. Apparently, he fielded offers from a lot of teams in the Dutch top flight. but he apparently went with Fortuna. He liked their pitch the best. So great to hear of an American being loved and respected in the country that where they ply their trade. How do you feel about this?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, you know, there are a thousand ways to, it seems like, to work your way up the soccer pyramid in all kinds of different countries. And so, yeah, congrats to him. I'm excited for him to get Eredivisie minutes. That's, you know, an awesome step forward.
Yeah, I mean, Reading are in need of a striker. So I sort of thought it was within the realm of possibility for him to come back to Reading after scoring so many goals in the second league in the Netherlands. But, you know, this is great. I'm not too concerned. I don't know if Reading is going to be his long-term future, but, you know, American in a top European league, cool.
Yeah, and potentially, too, if the – I mean, here's hoping, too, that he gets lots of minutes. But, yeah. I think when we see these guys move, and especially these young players, we want them to – we always want them to be on a team where they're actually going to get playing time.
Yeah.
And so, like a lesser team in the Eredivisie who needs a striker, that, you know, that's great. So hopefully he gets a lion's share of minutes and scores some non-satellite goals.
Yeah, totally. All right. Now an American who will not be in a top league, but a second league, Julian Green signed with Bundesliga 2 side Greuther Fürth. Is that how you say it? Do you know? You took many years of German, and I didn't. Yes. Great. Greuther Fürth, which... You know, here's my piece of trivia, is the favorite side of former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger. What do you make of Julian Green's move down a league?
I mean, as if Americans needed any more reason to feel ambiguous about Julian Green allying him with Henry Kissinger.
yeah.
No, I mean, I don't have too much to say about it. I think Julian Green still has like a... you know, like a lot to work on in his own career. And, you know, watching him in the with the U.S. men's national team 2.0, you know, he seemed kind of uneven. So I really don't have like much to say about him anymore. I just sort of feel like he needs to do something more for me to even have like enough to have an opinion about. I don't know. How do you feel about it?
I feel
just what I say makes sense.
Yes, and how I feel is just scared because he didn't really have a great year there last year when he was on loan, and I just, you know, he's still very young. He's still only like 22, just 1 month older than Kellen Acosta, so he's got time to turn things around. I just hope he does it, but you know, mostly what I fear is just fear and trepidation. Yeah. All right. And another German American. American Soccer Now, Flex Mag, both reported on the same kicker story that Bobby Wood is on he's on the move to Hanover 96. I think this would be great, kind of the opposite of Julian Green, where Bobby Wood was due to play in the Bundesliga 2, but now he's getting linked to a Bundesliga club, which actually surprised me because Wood did not have a spectacular year in the Bundesliga. So it's reassuring to see that there's still a market for him. He's still well respected enough, highly regarded enough that he... people feel like he belonged in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, I think, you know, I agree. I think it's good for him, but like I was just saying, as long as he's getting minutes, that's the thing that's kind of important for us as men's national team fans, if he's getting an opportunity to develop. But potentially, too, I think I'm hoping that, I mean, given, I mean, I, you know, this is purely speculative on my part, but hey, you know, Hamburg did not play well. And so it just seemed like it was a mess. And it's hard to be a good player on a team that was a total mess. And so maybe moving to a different team, different coaching system, different style of play maybe, or whatever, gives him some more structure to succeed. And not just because he'll be having better players to play with and pass him the ball so he can score and that kind of stuff, but maybe some other coaching and things like that will help kind of set him up for success in a different way. So yeah. I don't have like – I'm not like – you know, cheering this move on because it's just as could potentially just be the sort of thing where like he makes this move and maybe he doesn't even play that much. I don't know enough about Hanover's lineup or that kind of thing, but potentially if it puts him in a different situation where he either has to start from scratch and earn some more minutes or get some additional coaching from someone who sees something in him and it's like, hey, he needs to work on this part of the game, we think we can improve from that way, and he actually turns into a better player, that's, you know, a great outcome for us.
Yeah, I'm happy with it. All right, so and then the last thing I just wanted to go through, kind of the state of the MLS halfway through the season. Looking at the standings, what like given what you thought or how you thought the season would go, what surprises you the most right now when you look at where teams are at?
Well, let's just ignore Sounders and Toronto, because I feel like we've already talked about those as surprises.
Yes.
And we'll just say those are surprises. But
DC United has only played 12 games.
Yeah, that is crazy.
That's insane. I actually think that's pretty dumb. that's preposterous. I mean, everyone else has played at the minimum. I guess Seattle's played 14. Portland has played 14. It just doesn't feel like a real league when, like, you can have Columbus has played 18 games right now. And, you know, DC United.
Yeah, DC United's played 12. It's crazy. Yeah, but I think in terms of on-the-field results, what's really surprised me, New England has surprised me. That's definitely a big story for this year. But otherwise, looking at the kind of top teams, I mean, LAFC has been a surprise, and Real Salt Lake have been a surprise, I think.
Yeah.
But, and in some ways, like, FC Dallas kind of returning to form to some extent. Mm-hmm. You know, I think last year they struggled. They didn't live up to expectation, and there was a lot of kind of, like, unrest there. But now they seem to be, like, kind of course correcting and playing better, though. Yeah, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to see FC Dallas playing well, even though they lost to the Red Bulls yesterday. But yeah, I'm happy about Dallas. I'm happy about LAFC. I mean, LAFC is surprising, being that they're an expansion team and are doing so well. I guess what surprises me the most, apart from the DC United thing, I really thought Orlando City would be better. I am thrilled to see Columbus, like, is still, like, a stable team, you know, with everything going on off field. They're still strong. They could still make a run in the playoffs. I am surprised that the Dynamo right now are out of the playoffs, just because it seems like they've been playing so well. I guess, no, that's probably about it. I guess I need to stop saying I guess. My allergies.
That's definitely about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think some other things. You know, Patrick Vieira going to Nice, shocking. But also, Dominic Torrent, he won his first game in charge of NYCFC today against Toronto 2-1. An assistant for Pep Guardiola for 11 years. I think he brings a lot of pedigree to the MLS, so to speak. Going forward, I will be, and this is just because I'm a low-level fan of the Impact, but I think if the Impact can make the playoffs, they're a sort of baffling team. And you never know what's going to happen where they could possibly be playoff disruptors. Giovinco has 74 shots, 23 on goal, but only 3 goals. I find that to be really shocking. Joseph Martinez, for example, has 38 shots, 25 shots on goal, and 14 goals. So, yeah, I think Giovinco is one of these players that is, it must be like a matter of tiny, tiny margins, but
yeah, Martinez has more goals than the Seattle Sounders.
That's insane. Oh my god, good on you, Martinez. Yeah, but so I mean, it's the MLS season taking place during the World Cup is always just like very, I don't quite know what to make of it.
Well, how about this? What players have impressed you this season or have surprised you this season?
I guess, you know, I'm going to say this is fairly recently, but Adama Diomande for LAFC, he scored 4 goals in 4 appearances. They brought him in not too long ago, obviously, but that's shocking. I think a couple of weeks ago I said Ignacio Piatti for MVP. I think I don't know if I'm going to double down, but he's been playing pretty well. That's kind of shocking. You know, I don't know how to say what I'm about to say. It's sort of like Tyler Adams in the CONCACAF Champions League. Awesome. Mm-hmm. But I've been hearing fewer and fewer rumors about him going to Europe. And so I'm kind of, I don't know. Like, I feel like my excitement is waning on him. Like, I feel like he's kind of almost becoming this unrealized potential.
Still too early on him. He's still doing some bright stuff for sure.
And Albert, Albert Ellis, great for the Dynamo. I think that will be my last player. Yeah.
Yeah, that jives with me. Yeah, I think yeah, I don't even know if it's worth talking about DC United and well, yeah, let's not talk about that. Okay. Yeah. Let's move on here.
Great. I actually don't have anything else to say.
Well, then we're just moving right along.
Yeah, moving on to dinner time. You have any last thoughts you want to add? Any more gushing for the World Cup?
Yeah, plenty to. Okay, here's a good question. What has been your goal of the tournament so far?
My goal of the tournament. I've had the worst coffee run. Timing for this, you know, like I have gotten up to pour more coffee during so many goals, and like gotten up to finally brush my teeth and to finally go to the bathroom, and then missed so many goals. I think like the first four games I watched, I didn't see a single one. Like I missed that Chucky Lozano goal because I was getting up to get some coffee. As far as like technical goal, there's been a lot of standout ones. The Lingard goal today was great. But as far as emotionally. Shit, I don't know, man. You know, anytime Mexico scores, I'm very pleased. But what about you?
Yeah, I think I was having this conversation with some friends, which is why I want to turn it on you. And we all had like a different kind of take. Yeah. You know, there was the Ronaldo free kick goal.
Oh yeah.
The you know, right?
We haven't even mentioned Ronaldo.
Yeah, and then there's the Tony Cruz or the
Marco free kick. No, Tony Cruz,
Cruz.
Yeah.
Tony Cruz.
Amazing.
Yeah. And basically, there's just been a series of goals like that, as you said, the Lozano goal.
Yeah.
And it's really hard, even this early in the tournament, just to be like, oh, yeah, that was like the best goal so far, because there have been so many that have been like truly awesome.
Yeah.
And even like I love the Luka Modric goal. That was beautiful. And there's just a lot of moments like that already, and so we have a glut of them, which has been lovely.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any personal goals for the rest of the tournament?
That's tough. I think that you know, just always trying to watch more games, it's tricky.
Yes. When you work
during the day.
Yeah, and I work sort of second shift, and so I'm loving it, but I have my schedule keeps changing. But what were you gonna say?
My work, you know, friends and I, as people have kind of talked strategy about this, which is that like, okay, during the group stage, we're not going to stream the games on any big TVs at work because these games are like less important in some way, right? Mm-hmm. In a sense. But then once we get into the knockout rounds, then we're going to start trying to stream them. But we sort of wanted to save our bullets to when the games were bigger so that like, you know, like 3 weeks in, people are like, oh, more World Cup. I'm tired of that. Let's turn this off kind of thing. Or yeah. People are like, okay, get back to work. So my strategy is an evolving one. I'm going to go from like sneakily watching stuff and listening to it while I'm at work to trying to put some games on TVs at work. And watching more games that way.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So that's definitely a goal. I've actually kind of found it harder to I've been rooting for Senegal to some extent, but I still I haven't felt kind of quite the same as I would. Well, obviously, about rooting for the U.S. men's national team or rooting for another team. I haven't actually found a way to like really buy into it. And I think it's because I've just like have to like squeeze things in all the time. Or maybe it's because, yeah, I don't know what it is.
I think, you know, as the stakes are raised in the competition, so will your emotions. So like you're rooting for Senegal in the group stage has a less of an emotional pull than rooting for Senegal during a knockout game. So I wouldn't overthink it.
Well, I feel like today was kind of like that, where it was a chance for them. They were up 2-1 to put away Japan and to like, you know, have 6 points. And then when Japan equalized, it was devastating, but it wasn't really devastating for me. Yeah. So it's a weird kind of balance, I think, of approaching this a little bit more with a little bit more remove.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. As things advance and there are more teams like with kind of like really things on the line, then the stakes will change for me personally to some extent.
Yeah. I think my goal for this World Cup is there's this guy I work with named Freddie, And serve at this restaurant here in Austin during the school year, I adjunct. And there's this party of French Canadians that came in. They bought out the restaurant. And so Freddie saw me speaking some French to them. And my good buddy Freddie just looks at me and goes, "Ah, Zidane." And he just points at me. And so he's been calling me Zidane now for the last 2 weeks. And my goal is just to play this as cool as possible so that it sticks, because it's nothing in my life has ever made me happier than this nickname. Every time, really? Every time I see him, he just goes, "Zidane." So it means the world to me. And if he ever finds out,
even though that the only reason he is calling you Zidane is because you are bald and speak French,
whatever. I have no tangible skills. I have like the least graceful human being on the planet, but. Don't care. It's making me so pleased.
That is awesome. That's a good goal. Well, thanks, Freddie, for that.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Freddie. All right. On that note, if you would like to tell us your own personal goals for the World Cup, you can always email us at softtattooedmillionaires@gmail.com, and you can find us on Twitter at softtattoofc. Enjoy the cup. We'll be back next week with, more great nicknames.
Sounds good.